Welcome to Past Impressions on the Mormon Channel. I'm your host, Brent Topp, Chair of the Department of Church History and Doctrine at Brigham Young University. Again with me today is my guest, Dr. Milton Backman, a great scholar and expert and outstanding teacher of LDS Church History, Emeritus Professor of Church History and Doctrine at Brigham Young University. Milt, we're glad to have you back with us again for this this other program on Kirtland. Milt taught at BYU for nearly 40 years, and we are so grateful to have you. In our last program with Milt, we talked about some of the great developments in and revelations and visions that occurred both in Kirtland and also in Hiram, Ohio. We ended our last program with talking about the persecution, the mobbings that caused the prophet Joseph and Sidney to move from Hiram and the John Johnson home back to Kirtland. And it was in this second move back to Kirtland, Milt, that some really significant developments with regards to education also took place. Why don't you tell us some of the things that were somewhat unique and revolutionary in what Joseph did in organizing schools back in Kirtland?
Well, during the Kirtland period, Joseph received so many important revelations, and one of them was Section 88, where Joseph was commanded by the Lord through revelation to organize a school of the prophets. And this was significant because, in one sense, it's the very first school established by Latter-day Saints, but it was also the first missionary training program. Mm-hmm. And at that time, missionaries were constantly being called. They were going forth serving. And then during the winter, they weren't as busy doing their missionary work because it was too cold. Uh-huh. And so the winter was an ideal place for the missionaries to gather and to be taught. And thus, by revelation, Joseph learned that he should organize a school of the prophets. Now, that was a very, very different school because it was based on a revelation, and the curriculum was actually outlined. For example, in Section 88, for example, Joseph learned that they were to teach one another words of wisdom, and they were to study things both in heaven and on earth and under the earth, things which have been, things which are, things which must shortly come to pass. They really learned about the nations and kingdoms. In other words, they were certainly to learn languages. This was just not to be a theological school, but it was to be an educational institution. And then by revelation, they were given instructions on procedures to follow, and they were told they should receive the sacrament and so on. And thus, it was a school based upon the revelations. And it was during that school that several Latter-day Saints saw the Father and the Son. And Joseph prepared these people. He told them that he wanted them to have a personal witness that Jesus is the Christ. And then on one of these occasions, Zebedee Coulter testified that he beheld the Son and the Father. Now, I believe that these appearances of the Father and the Son were appearances of the Father and Son in the celestial kingdom. Because in Kirtland, in the temple, he had this glorious vision that led to the information on salvation for the dead. But I think also the visions in the Newell K. Whitney store at this time were visions where the brethren, it would have been Zebedee Coulter and John Murdoch and possibly others, saw the two heavenly beings in the celestial kingdom. And then it was at the same time that Joseph received the prophecy on war, and that would have been an issue for discussion. They would have received the word of wisdom. In fact, the school of the prophets was held in the upstairs stairs of the Newell K. Whitney store. That was the home of Joseph temporarily. There was a bedroom for Joseph and Emma, and there was a room that was called the translating room where Joseph was working on the inspired revision, receiving revelation, and there was a room where about 20-some-odd people could meet to study as a school. And Joseph went into the translation room on a particular occasion, and he received the revelation known as the Word of Wisdom. And then he took the revelation in it and read it to members of the School of the Prophets. And at that time, there were about 20-some-odd members who were meeting in that particular school. And they were so excited in one sense about it. They were so convinced that this was of the Lord and they should observe it, they threw their pipes into the fireplace. So this was a time when Joseph was receiving revelations, recording the revelations, and then discussing the doctrines with the members of the School of the Prophets.
We're going to talk about other educational developments that took place in this Kirtland period. You're listening to Past Impressions on the Mormon Channel. I'm your host, Brent Topp, and with me today is my friend and colleague, Milt Backman, Emeritus Professor of Church History and Doctrine at Brigham Young University, where he taught for 38 years, and great contributions made by Dr. Backman. In our last segment, Milt, you talked about the School of the Prophets and how it comes by revelation in Section 88, the curriculum that was given that was both what we would say spiritual in nature, very, very theological in nature, but also some very academic academic subjects that were commanded to be studied as well, and as a missionary training center. But the School of the Prophets wasn't the only school or educational program that comes during this period of time in Kirtland. Why don't you tell us about some of the other educational developments that go on during this great period of time in LDS church history?
There was really only one session of the School of Prophets that was held. That was 1833 for approximately 3 months. And in that school, they participated in the ordinance of the sacrament, and they also participated in a type of endowment, a washing of the feet ceremony that was, in a sense, a preparation for a more complete endowment. And then after that session was completed, the School of the Prophets was replaced by another school. It was called the School of the Elders. And the difference was that they continued to study the same basic structure. It was still a missionary training program, but they didn't follow all of the instructions that were given in Section 88. And sometimes they were called the School of Prophets, but more specifically, it was the School of the Elders. And this School of the Elders continued to meet year after year, in fact, for three different years during the winter. And it was during that first session of the School of the Elders that Joseph Smith and Sidney Rigdon delivered a series of lectures called the Lectures on Faith. Mm-hmm. And that Lectures on Faith was eventually compiled and inserted in the first edition of the Doctrine and Covenants in 1835. Meanwhile, other schools were established. A number of talented individuals, such as Eliza R. Snow, arrived in Kirtland. And Joseph Smith asked her to come and teach a school for the women. And so basically you had grammar schools established, you had a type of high school established, then Joseph established a Hebrew school where they brought in a Hebrew scholar. And so there was a major expansion in
educational. Why do you think that they felt the need to study Hebrew? You know, that's kind of fascinating. You mentioned in the segment on the School of the Prophets that they were learning languages. This was part of it. What's the affinity for Hebrew? I think it's somewhat obvious, but why don't you tell us what you think?
Hebrew, of course, would have been the language of the Bible partly. And so in order to fully understand the Bible, it was necessary to know what was meant by the Hebrew. But yet it's interesting, as Joseph Smith worked on the inspired revision of the Bible, he didn't use any of the Hebrew texts.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Actually, he used the King James Version, and he just sought information not through scholarship of knowing what the original manuscript said or meant. It was just strictly revelation. So the revelation was used, but yet Joseph was interested in languages. And Hebrew was one of the languages. And so they established the Hebrew school. It continued for some time. And Joseph was busy not just studying Hebrew, but he was studying other languages, learning whatever he could, and especially was studying English. Yeah. Now, there really, I believe there's at least three Joseph Smiths. There's Joseph the prophet, who continued to receive revelation. And then there was Joseph the man. And Joseph the man was not an exceptional writer. In fact, he was not a competent writer. And during the early history of the church, Joseph Smith was not able to write complete sentences. In fact, it was in Kirtland that Joseph began for the first time writing a journal which included an autobiography. So in Kirtland, for the first time, he wrote an account of the first vision and the calling of Martin Harris and Oliver Cowdery, insisting in the publication of the Book of Mormon. And when Joseph wrote that autobiography, he couldn't write complete sentences. But during the 1830s, he studied grammar. And so this person who could hardly write, he was just not a competent writer. He became a much better writer as a result of his attending school and different schools in Kirtland. So Kirtland was a great educational opportunity and experience for the prophet Joseph Smith. So many members were studying a variety of subjects. And most important in one sense was the establishment of a publishing house. After the destruction of the press in Missouri, there was a need for a press to publish the revelations of the prophet Joseph Smith. Consequently, they established a printing office. In this printing office, they printed a new edition of the Doctrine and Covenants, the first edition. They published the history of the church, part of the history through Messenger and Advocate and other newspapers. So subsequently, there was a major thrust on Joseph learning and other Latter-day Saints learning. And so the Joseph, the end of the Kirtland period, was much better educated. And many other members were much better educated because of the emphasis on education during that Kirtland experience.
You're listening to Past Impressions on the Mormon Channel. With me today is Dr. Milt Backman. And Milt, we were talking in this last segment about education, but we've also begun talking about the publishing efforts of the church. Why don't we continue and talk about how those two are related? Education, publishing, schools, newspapers, books, all of those things come together. So why don't you tell us about the publishing house and some of those early publications that come out during the Kirtland period?
Joseph continued to receive revelation and visions, but it was so important for Joseph to make the information available to the membership of the church. The members wanted a copy of the revelations, and they were being copied, but they, in being copying, they sometimes were errors crept in. Subsequently, the members wanted to read the revelations. They wanted to read the Book of Mormon, and sometimes there weren't enough copies of the Book of Mormon. They wanted to read the newspapers. Subsequently, they established a press and published the first edition of the Doctrine and Covenants, which included this series of lectures that were given in the School of the Prophets, but that had been the School of the Elders.
You know, with that Doctrine and Covenants and publishing that first edition and the lectures on faith. Now, we don't have that included in our edition of the Doctrine and Covenants today, but I find it fascinating that the word doctrine in the title of the Doctrine and Covenants as it published in 1835, that was referring to those great theological lessons that were given in those early schools. And covenants was a 19th century word that often meant revelations, that had both the teachings from the schools and the revelations all combined together. What about the newspapers there? What was going on in the newspapers? How were they like regular frontier newspapers, but how were they different than newspapers that would have been around in Ohio at that time?
When they started publishing newspapers, they first published part of the Evening and Morning Star because that had been destroyed. The press had been destroyed in Missouri. And that was very important because it contained some of the information that Joseph was learning through his inspired translation of the Bible. Plus, it included information that was available in the Doctrine and Covenants. And people wanted the copy of the Revelation. They wanted the Doctrine and Covenants as we want to have it today. And so the first edition of the Doctrine and Covenants was published. Most of the Book of Commandments had been destroyed, so that wasn't really available to the membership. So now with the publishing of the Doctrine and Covenants, they could read many of the Revelations. And then also, after they'd published some of the later versions of the Evening and Morning Star, they created a new paper, The Messenger and Advocate. And that contained much information on the early history of the church. For example, Oliver Cowdery, for the first time, wrote a very brief history of the church, telling in some detail about Moroni's visitations to Joseph Smith. And also, he bore his testimony. And you have the powerful testimony of Oliver Cowdery of the restoration of the Aaronic priesthood. So it contained, for the first time, information on the early history of the church, contained revelations of the prophet Joseph Smith, information from the inspired revision, and thus this became a great missionary tool and also an educational tool because members of the church then learned principles that they wouldn't have known otherwise, and then they were able to take that information out into the world and tell others more effectively the beliefs and program of the restored church.
You know, there's another interesting thing in that Kirtland period that goes right along with the publishing of important books and documents and newspapers is Emma Smith's work on the hymnal. In section 25, years or months earlier, she's commanded to do that, but it isn't actually till Kirtland that it comes to fruition. Does W.W. Phelps help her with that? And yes. What role does W.W. Phelps play in this publishing and bringing out some of the important works?
Well, W.W. Phelps was busy composing hymns.
Okay.
Now, remember, there were just words. And so actually the hymnal just contained words, and many of the hymns were just very popular Protestant hymns of the time. But then W.W. Phelps was busy creating many, many new hymns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What were some of the other, we've talked about the schools, we've talked about publishing. What were some of the other major events or events associated with this period of time in Kirtland? What's going on in Kirtland, everyday life in Kirtland during this period of time as well?
One of the most significant changes that it took in occurred in Kirtland was the revelation to build a temple. And when that revelation was unfolded, there were only about 100 members of the church. Now, in 1830, the population of Kirtland was about 1,000. In 1833, it was just a little more than 1,000. But between 1833 and 1837, the population increased from 1,000 to 3,000. Mm. So you had approximately a growth of 2,000 people during that very short period of time. Much of it took place in 35 and 36, 37. So the community changed. Suddenly, there were new sawmills, grist mills, merchandising stores, offices, schools, books. I mean, Kirtland suddenly became one of the largest small communities in that part of Ohio. It was a different city. And as a result of the growth of the church, a few people left, and some people were concerned. because the Mormons were taking over, and the population increase was due to the Mormons. When the Mormons left, the population shrank back to a little more than 1,000, maybe 1,700. Mm-hmm. So this was a period of tremendous growth and tremendous change in the community. It was a different community.
You're listening to Past Impressions on the Mormon Channel. I'm your host, Brent Topp, Chair of the Department of Church History and Doctrine at Brigham Young University. And we've been talking with Dr. Milt Backman, Emeritus Professor of Church History at Brigham Young University. Milt, we've talked about some of the great events associated with Kirtland, the developments of leadership and structure of the church, the revelations, the visions, the doctrinal development. We've talked about schools and publications and the great emphasis on education. What else is going on with Joseph and the leaders of the church during this time, and where is Joseph going, and what is happening in the church broadly at this time?
Since there were two gathering places of the saints during the 1830s, Ohio and Missouri, it was necessary for Joseph to constantly travel to Missouri to help the saints there with their challenges. And during this period, during the Ohio period, Joseph made at least 5 trips to Missouri. And also he traveled as missionary into the eastern states. He traveled up into Canada. There were some years where he spent at least 5 months of the year traveling. But most important, he was concerned about developments in Zion, in Missouri. So he traveled to Missouri and set apart that area for the building of a temple and for the gathering of the saints. And then when he learned of the tragedy that took place, the expulsion of the Latter-day Saints from Jackson County, he organized a Zion's camp, and these people were called by revelation to travel to Missouri to help the saints, to take provisions, to assist them, hoping maybe they could help them regain their lands. So he was directing the Zion's camp, and then traveled to Missouri with the Zion's camp. Then after they were driven out, he traveled to the other sections of Missouri, back and forth, trying to direct affairs of the church in Missouri at the same time he was directing affairs of the church in Kirtland. And when he went to Missouri, he received a number of revelations. This is a period where people gained a whole new understanding about Adam on the almond and Adam's role and so on. So Joseph, the Kirtland was a headquarters, but Joseph, being the prophet of the church, needed to travel constantly to other areas as a missionary and also as a church prophet and leader.
You mentioned earlier that it was during this period of time, 1835, where we have the first presidency of the church organized. What role did the first presidency play in this Kirtland period of time? When you say Joseph is off traveling, were they traveling together? How did the structure of the church operate when you've got two headquarters of the church?
The first presidency was made up primarily of Sidney Rigdon, Frederick G. Williams, and Joseph Smith. And when Joseph left, these leaders assumed much responsibility. And in some respect, the spokesman of the church was Sidney Rigdon. He delivered the major sermons. It's interesting that we do not have any sermon outlines of Joseph, any notes. Joseph was not preaching in Kirtland very often. He was later in Nauvoo, but he didn't then write sermons. Mm-hmm. The real spokesman in some respects was Sidney Rigdon.
Well, I think the Lord had kind of directed that in Revelation, that Sidney was told that was one of his assignments, to be a spokesman. And I think Joseph leaned heavily on Sidney in that regard.
So he had two very competent individuals, Sidney Rigdon and
Frederick G. Williams.
Mm-hmm. And then you also had at this time the Quorum of the Twelve organized, and what was their responsibility? To be in charge of affairs of the church outside of Zion. The High Council tended to be responsible for affairs in Kirtland. So now you had this expansion of the church, and eventually expansion into England and so on later. You actually had the apostles assuming leadership of the worldwide church, and Joseph and others concentrating on the church in the United States and in Missouri and in Kirtland.
Well, from your years of research, and I know this is a hard question, but if you were to just outside of the temple, which we'll talk about next time, if you were to just say the Cliff Notes version or the nutshell version of the absolute significance of Kirtland in those years, and how does Kirtland bless our lives today in the 21st century, how would you summarize what we have shared?
I believe his greatest contribution was to record the Word of God and unfold to us the beauties of the gospel of Jesus Christ through the revelations, through the republishing of the Book of Mormon, through publishing the information and the Pearl of Great Price. It's providing us with the basic doctrines that are available to all of us. And then as we read these scriptures, we feel the Spirit of the Lord. That's how we benefit. We are taught today through the Spirit, and that was the program of the early Latter-day Saints. They joined the church, and they experienced a power of God that they had not experienced before. And we can do the same today by reading the scriptures, the Word of God that was given to the prophet Joseph Smith during that period. So we're not with Joseph, but we can participate in the experiences of Joseph. We can listen to Joseph by reading the great scriptures that he unfolded. That's the beauty of the restoration. Yeah. It's the power of God that's now available to everyone who will listen. I was converted by reading the Book of Mormon. I remained in the experience. My life has never been the same. Everyone can experience that power, that love, that Spirit of Christ. That's the message of the restoration, that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. He is the head of the church. He is the Christ, the Redeemer, the Savior of the world.
That beautifully stated. I think as we bring this to a close today, as you said, Milt, that whether you're a first-generation convert to a saint in Samoa or Sri Lanka or Singapore or Siberia, you have claim upon that Kirtland church history just as much as those who had ancestors there because of those great developments, because of the doctrine, the church that we enjoy today, of the foundational developments that took place in Kirtland. Well, Dr. Backman, thank you so much for being with us, and we invite our listeners to join in a future program when Dr. Backman will continue talking with us about the Kirtland Temple and other significant events associated with the Kirtland, Ohio period. We will have other important scholars and guests that will talk about the history of the church, and that is how we have past impressions on the Mormon Channel. I'm Brent Topp, your host, and we look forward to having you join us in the future.